Species.
Unite. And it's true that, you know, as much as online makes things much more accessible in so many ways, sometimes it's the feeling and seeing that actually really gets people over the line, because they're like, oh, wow, that feels really, that looks really good. Oh, look at it on me. Oh, you can style it like this as well. And oh, you can go over the shoulder. Like, yeah. The touch is really important for consumer goods.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Jessica Kruger. Jessica grew up in Sydney, Australia, and is the founder of a vegan handbag company. I wanted to talk to her because they just had a rebrand, and they're now using a material called Mirum. Mirum is vegan leather made by a company called Natural Fiber Welding, and it has zero plastic. Jessica's company is called Shaker, formerly known as Luxtra. Before this, Jessica founded Ethos, a super successful vegetarian restaurant in London, which is where she and I met up and where she lives. Her mom was really the inspiration that sparked all of this. She went vegan, and soon after, Jessica took it to a whole nother level.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Thank you for coming today. It's really nice to meet you.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise. Thanks for having me.
I want to start by talking about your mom.
Yes, mommy.
Yes, I read your story. So will you talk about what happened to her?
Yeah. So I was telling the story the other day. Then I realized I forgot half of it and I had to go even further back. So let's start in 1960.
Whoa. Okay.
My mom is Sheila. She grew up in, she was born in England, and her father was a physicist, and he was invited to move to the States for a little while to teach at a university. And so when my mom was 3 years old, she emigrated to the U.S. Back in those days, you didn't have a expiry date on your immigration card. Many, many years later, she somehow came across her immigration card with her little curls and like three-year-old chubby cheeks. She went to the U.S. Embassy in Sydney, where I grew up and where she lives, and said, oh, look at this. What can I do with this? And they said, well, oh, gosh, they went away for a little while. And then came back to her a few weeks or a few months later and said, okay, well, you have to move to the US and then you can get a green card. And she was like, whoa, like 55 or like something like that at the time. My sister wanted to live in the States. So she's like, okay, well, maybe we could do this as a way of getting Kelly into the US. So yeah, my mom moved to California, and she wasn't quite sure what to do there because she wasn't expecting to go there. And she's like, okay, maybe I'll do some volunteering. And I like animals. And then she did her research. And she came across Farm Sanctuary in Acton, California, and was an intern there for 6 months or so at the age of 55 with all the youngins on the farm.
That's so cool. And when you go to Farm Sanctuary, I haven't been to the California one, but I've been to the New York one a few times.
Yeah.
Like, you can't help but be completely changed because all these animals are rescued from horrible conditions.
Yeah. So, you know, in preparation of like her big trip away, she's like, okay, well, I've got to go vegan and no wool and like, okay, let me try and adapt to this. And so she, of course, she went over and she was vegan. She lived a vegan lifestyle and still does now. But the sort of story continues that I sort of got interested in what she was doing and then watched a documentary, and that's changed my life as well.
What documentary?
It was Forks Over Knives.
Oh.
Which is not like super, super animal welfare. It's more about health, really. But it was just like seeing footage of what goes on in factory farming, really.
This is like 2012, right?
Yeah, 2012 or 2013, I think, or maybe 2011, one of those years.
but more than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so you decide, oh, that's it, I'm vegan?
Yeah, like 1 hour to the next. I'm a really sensitive soul, so I like cry at movies and things. And I was like, oh my gosh, how could this happen? And what was I doing all my life? And yeah, Yep.
And then you decide, wait, that's not enough. Now I need to open a vegan restaurant.
So I was living in Switzerland at the time. So I went back to Switzerland with my mom and my family at Christmas. And that's when all this happened, as she was going away in like the January or something. And so I went back to Geneva and like looking for vegan meals in restaurants because I was going out to with friends a lot at the time, and crying in restaurants all the time because it's like a bowl of leaves that I could eat because like tofu didn't really enter the vocabulary there. And I think I'd came across vegan chefs in New York. When you start your vegan journey, you're like, okay, what can I eat? And then you come across all these great recipes being put out by people on the internet. And I was like, well, why can't restaurants over here serve that? And so, yeah, that led me down the food route.
And is that why you moved to London?
Yes, eventually. So I tried to start a vegetarian restaurant. I didn't try to be a vegan restaurant to start with, because back in 2013, it felt a bit extreme. And it's like, I want customers to walk in the door. So maybe vegetarian was sort of the easier way in. I tried to do that in Geneva. The market didn't seem ready and the price is very expensive. Switzerland is an expensive country. So I moved to England, to London, to start my restaurant.
And with you had no like restaurant experience?
I think,
right?
I'd waitressed for 3 months once in a pizza restaurant.
So what'd you do?
Well, it's like I keep like every day, I say, not every single day, but like it's like, okay, it's literally not rocket science. I can probably work out how to do this. You know, it's like, okay, you Google, how do you start a restaurant? And like checklist for starting a restaurant. And, you know, you start by trying to find a location. And then at the same time, you're thinking about recipes and who's going to cook, because I'm definitely not a chef. It was a lot of work.
But it worked.
It did. Yes. Yes. And it was one of the, Time Out said one of London's best loved vegetarian spots. And like, we got 5 stars in Time Out magazine. And it was loved.
And at the time, there really weren't. I mean, now London's like, there's a vegan restaurant in every corner. And that's not that long ago.
No.
But they didn't really exist.
No, exactly. And that's what I wanted to, it's sort of like to your point a moment ago, I want to encourage people gently, but never preach to people. Because people just shut down if you try to like talk at them. It was more about making it a beautiful space and, marble countertops and, trees inside. Yeah. So I just tried to make it a welcoming place.
And then you decided, that's it, I gotta do something. Now I know how to open a restaurant. I need a new challenge.
What's next? No. So, choice of business partner is a really important thing if you're running a business.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a silent business partner for many years, and then eventually we didn't get on very well, and one of us needed to move on. I thought it would be him, but it was me. So yeah, be careful who you choose to work with. Keeping aligned for the long term is a difficult thing. Like you can be like super enthusiastic together for like a few years, but then people's lives change and different people have different chapters in their lives. So
absolutely,
that's a hard thing to keep going long term. So yeah, when I left, thinking that I'd be at the restaurant for a decade or more, I was like, okay. But now what do I do? Like recalibration. And then I had lots of different ideas. I tried to get a job, I think, because my background is so higgledy-piggledy that people are like, oh, no. No, go away. So I'm like, fine, no one wants to hire me. I'll start my own thing again. So then that's when I came up with the idea of Luxtra, which is now just rebranded as Shaker.
And also with this, you had no experience, right?
Well, no. Just like bags. And when I was a child, I wanted to be a fashion designer.
When I was a child, I wanted to be a chef. I'm going to open a restaurant. And so same thing. You Googled, how do I be?
Basically, yeah. Yeah. I can draw. And I mean, I did 1 year of architecture at uni, but that wasn't for me. So I always call myself a sponge. Like I always go and talk to people and listen and like say, okay, well, you've been in this industry. What's it like? Who should I talk to? What should I learn? Which networking events should I go to? And eventually, as part of that, I found a product developer. Because someone said, oh, there's such a thing as a product developer. I said, oh, okay, there you go. That's what I need. And she was very instrumental in helping me understand how you do a technical drawing and how you speak to the manufacturer and, all of the, this was pre-Brexit, but like still like shipping stuff and yeah.
And you just started making bags.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful. Oh, I mean, Luxtra and now Shaker are all beautiful bags. So with Luxtra, you use totally different materials than you're using now?
It's an evolution. I mean, with Luxtra, I think it's my journey in sustainable fashion. I mean, I say sustainable in inverted commas because sustainability is a big word. And I don't pretend that we're a perfectly sustainable brand. But leaving that aside, over the years since I started working on these non-leathers or leather alternatives, they've evolved so much and there's so many new ones and, you know, you play with some, you get the swatches and you sew it on the machine at home and see how it like, and then you like whack it on the wall to see if it breaks and, you know, so you got to test it out. And there's, because there's so many different types and they're all very new, it takes time and energy to work out which are the best ones to work with. So I've experimented a lot is what I'm trying to say.
It's true, like new and better materials are coming out like every month.
Yeah, I think there's a company or an organization called Material Innovation Initiative, MII, and they have sort of, I think they keep tabs on the number, and it's like, last time I checked, it was 90 companies around the world working on these types of materials.
I'm on the board.
Okay, yeah.
I know them well. It's incredible, some of the stuff that's happening now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Luxtra first,
yes.
And then we'll talk about the rebrand, because I'm so impressed. They're just like, let me think of something else that I've never tried and I have no experience with, and I'm going to become a handbag designer.
But it's just to show you that if you put your mind to something, you can. It's like, it's not rocket science. Like, you can, anyone can do it.
No, and we're so conditioned to not think that way.
Yeah.
But you also, it's not like you came out with like these kind of average looking, they're stunning.
Aww,
we'll have pictures on the website.
Yay.
They're absolutely gorgeous. They feel incredible. Yeah. I have one.
Yay.
And so, how does it build?
For Luxtra?
Yeah.
You know, you go to Italy, you meet with people that can potentially manufacture your product, you take the swatches of the material. So like, I remember one of the first ones I started working with them on was the Pinatex. So that's the pineapple leaf fiber material. It's a bit of a mouthful. And, you know, it's got quite a fibrous backing, which, you know, when you show people who are used to working with leather, they're like, oh my goodness, what is this? You want me to turn that into what? So it takes lots of prototype. We call them in the industry samples, but, you know, typically like the word is prototypes, back and forth and, okay, no, this doesn't work, or this is too soft, or that sags there, and back and forth. Until you arrive at a product that you're happy with, and then you sign it off and it goes into production. And then the production process happens. And then, like, in a lot of ways, I think the making of a physical product isn't the hardest part of that business. It's the marketing and the selling of it.
And how were you marketing?
I mean, you try everything, don't you? You try like Instagram, you try organic, and you try ads, and you try pop-ups, and you try flyers in mailboxes, you try speaking events, networking events, like, trade shows for consumers, trade shows for industry, like talking to people in the street, like you do everything and see what works.
I look at this differently, I think, than their average consumer because I only use vegan anything.
Yeah.
And because I love, like, especially the next gen, all the new stuff coming
and all
the new materials, that, like, I know who's doing what, right? But most people...
Average person on the street, no.
Have no idea. Yeah. And most people who aren't vegan but are, like, get excited about this stuff, they don't know, right? Mm-hmm. And so unless they see somebody, like, my board for... We're a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And my board is all now obsessed with vegan bags and vegan shoes.
Right?
And so they're like, did you see this one from... You know, and this is like a constant call.
Yeah.
But there are people who, if they weren't on my board, they would never know any of this existed.
Yes.
I think that's one thing we try to do is talk about these, especially like the brands we love and who are doing good in the world. Mm. I feel like we need just to get this out there. Like the more people, even if that's your shift into veganism, that you have... Mm-hmm. A bag now, you know, and you're not carrying a cow anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's a big step because when people do, and I see this all the time, is when someone compliments them, the first thing they say is, oh, it's vegan, or oh, it's made of pineapple, or it's made of apples.
Yeah.
And it gets people excited. So it's people who wouldn't be buying this, but somehow this has to like really permeate the world.
Exactly. That's one of the things I forgot to say in the marketing mix is press, PR.
Yeah.
That's a really important one. We have been working on the PR angle. So yeah, exactly. Putting it out there, getting journalists and people excited and talking about it. I think that's more than an ad on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's like people swipe past that in a nanosecond. Like, something interesting and like good, as you said, feel good stories is what's going to help change.
So will you talk about Mirum and what it is?
Yes. So Mirum, M-I-R-U-M, is the trade name of a material from a company called NFW, or Natural Fiber Welding. I think they're based in the US. They're a company like one of the ones we've mentioned. They've been working on these innovative new materials for a long time now and seem to have cracked sort of, I think, the holy grail for these, you know, vegan leathers or like leather alternatives are, you know, plastic-free, really. That's a big part because as consumers are becoming more educated, they're like, oh, well, vegan, a bit like with food, vegan doesn't necessarily equal healthy, or vegan doesn't necessarily equal eco. And so people are saying, oh, well, if it's vegan, it's full of plastic. And so Mirum is sort of one of the very first materials that is completely plastic-free, but it looks beautiful. It feels beautiful. It's made from a, what's the phrase? A sustainably sourced natural rubber. Rubber, so it's rubber.
Right. But it doesn't look like rubber.
No, it doesn't.
Like leather.
It does. They've done so much work and it looks really good. And they have a few different colors now and different like embossments. And so some are smooth, some have got a bit of a grain effect. Yeah, and it's sort of natural inputs like rice hulls and coconut husks go in to help pad it out. And yeah, it's a patented like process. They don't tell you like actually how they make it.
It's very secretive, very exclusive. What you were saying a minute ago about the plastic, and I think I agree, like, if we can say zero plastic, it makes people shut up, kind of, too.
Exactly.
But even the crappiest vegan leather that's super plastic is still better for the planet than animal leather.
I agree. But there's a big movement and big lobby that will say, oh, no, but it's a natural material, leather, and it's like, yeah. Right. But yeah, that's people will definitely come back with a different point of view, but I would agree with you.
I mean, I know it's only been a few weeks since it's been like 2 weeks since the rebrand, but are you already getting, like, are people getting excited about the zero plastic?
Yeah, I think so. And people are, you know, it's interesting because we're trying to make sure that our current customers who maybe really like Luxtra also feel, you know, involved in Shaker and don't feel alienated. So most of them that we've spoken to and have, you know, written back and said it's a great thing and they're really excited about the change.
Right. They are. They're very different bags. People will miss Luxtra, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But that's not a bad thing.
No. It's, I mean, we're still the same, just same heart, a little bit different.
And are all your bags Mirum now? Or are they all going forward?
So we only have one style going forward and three colors. So like, whoomp, pulling that collection right down, which is good because, you know, making product is inherently, you know, involves waste and energy and water and all of these things. So we don't want to be making a huge range that, you know, an inventory sitting on warehouse shelves is never fun for anybody. So we love working with Mirum so far, and we would love, I think the color range is a little bit limited at the moment. So, you know, if we want to be fashion, we want to keep it exciting.
Yeah.
And so we haven't ruled out any materials as yet, but the plastic thing is really important to us. So
it's kind of very cool that you only have the one bag right now.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It also puts the message out there that you don't need 500 of everything,
Yeah, we spoke to one lady about our PR and she's like, I can't represent you. There's only one style. And we're like, oh, can't you like use that and twist that a little bit? And,
that's what
a talking point.
It is a talking point because as much as we need to go zero plastic, more so we need to stop the consumerism.
Consuming.
That's equally as devastating to the planet. Talk about B Corp because I keep seeing it more and more.
Yeah, it's a much more consumer facing certification than like maybe GOTS, which is like for organic cotton. B Corp is, I think, doing a really good job making it a standard that consumers reference as being good for the planet or good for people. So B Corp stands, I'm pretty sure it stands for Benefit Corporation, I think. I might be wrong on that. The way I describe it is you apply to become a B Corp registered company, and you might see on, like, especially with food and drinks things, you see like a circle with a B in the middle of it with a little line underneath. That's B Corp's logo. And it basically is a stamp of approval from an outside body that this company is doing a lot of good things. But there's like specific areas and you have to get points in each of the areas. So it's out of 200 is the scoring. Most companies will only reach 50. And to qualify to become a B Corp, you need 80. So yeah.
It's super strict.
It is very strict.
But that's good because it means something.
It's a way of indicating to the consumer that, yeah, we really do walk the walk and talk the talk when we on our commitments.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a lot of work to do still, like everybody.
When you say that, what do you mean?
You know, we still have to ship out products from Italy to the UK, or we could be giving back more to the community. We could have much more stakeholder involvement, which, you know, as a team of three is a lot. Like, yeah. It's the same questionnaire go for big corporates and for smaller companies. So it's like there's a lot of room for, you know, policies to be implemented. You know, the ratio between the person that's the highest paid in the company and the lowest paid, like, is it like double or is it like 50 times?
Right.
You know, like those sorts of things.
So it's really everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very comprehensive.
So it's very cool that you have it. You know what I think I love about your story is that you went vegan in an hour because of a documentary. But this is how the thing about, like, when people go vegan because they're really hit like by it.
Yeah.
Is it's not just, oh, I'm going to stop eating this and stop eating that and not wear this and wear that. But it's like, okay, now I have to change my whole life.
Yeah.
And now I have to change my career. And now I have to change, like, what I'm doing in the world.
Yeah.
But it's true.
Yeah. I mean, when I came back from Sydney, when I, you know, in that hour that I became vegan, I went back to Geneva and I was working for a company that sold pet food. I was like, it was not my dream job by any means. And I was like the PA in dog's body. pun not intended. And I was just, and then, yeah, when I was like, okay, this company does not work with, I can't do this long term. Like this, I have got to get out of here. So yeah, I had to change jobs because I was selling meat.
I don't know anything else like that. Like when people go vegan and then all of a sudden it has to, it becomes.
It's very overwhelming though as well. Yeah. Like, you know, like I said earlier, I was crying so much because it's like, A, people don't care about these things. Why don't people care? And then B, well, and now I can't even eat in restaurants. So, you know, you get very angry at the world. You can.
And you get, I think this happens to most of us when we first go vegan, especially. You can't believe that nobody else is seeing it.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's painfully shocking. Mm-hmm. But you didn't see it 2 weeks ago. Now that we do, it's we can't understand why no one else is.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to be like, wait, no, I was like that too. And I wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I just was really conditioned.
Deliberately.
And we talk about this a lot at Species. We talk about, because it's different for a lot of people, but how does the veil come off?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And how do we like kind of help lift the veil a little bit without punching anybody in the face and making them feel judged? And it's tricky. There's not really a path for it.
Yeah, it's very individual.
Yeah, completely. Mm. And are most of your customers vegan?
No. So we did some, before we decided 100% on the rebrand, we're like, okay, let's talk to a lot of customers. So we put out on social media, who wants to talk to us? We'll give you something in return. So we interviewed, in-depth interviews with 30 different customers and potential customers as well. And a small percentage were vegan. You know, and our best customers are not vegan. So they like it because they care about, you know, the welfare, they care about the environment is probably a little bit more of a stronger reason for some of our customers. And then, you know, they like animals, but they still, I don't know how they square that circle.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm delighted to have non-vegan customers.
Because that's who kind of you want to.
Exactly.
Because the vegans already know.
Yes, exactly.
For sure. For sure. Where does Shaker go now that it's out in the world?
Trying to rebuild our profile and work on the press side of things for exactly what we were discussing earlier to try and get the word out there, show people that, you know, because I don't know, there's a bit of a vegan backlash at times. You feel like, oh, people, maybe in my industry, I'm seeing, oh, it's full of plastic. It's full of plastic. So no. Here's one of the solutions, guys.
Yeah.
So new designs as well. So while we only have one style now, we are working on some other beautiful ones. So we're excited about those. And just trying to be the next Stella McCartney.
Yeah, we need you guys out in the world.
And it's true that, you know, as much as online makes things much more accessible in so many ways, sometimes it's the feeling and seeing that actually really gets people over the line because they're like, oh, wow, that looks really good. Oh, look at it on me. Oh, you can style it like this as well. And oh, you can go over the shoulder. Like, the touch is really important for consumer goods.
Yeah. I think people now, too, there's a trust factor. Now these materials are amazing.
Yeah.
But vegan materials weren't amazing for a very long time.
Correct.
There's still a bias from people who don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
And so they don't know what they're looking at.
Mm.
Yeah.
More retail, physical retail.
That's what I'm trying to say. That's what we need. Way more physical retail. And to get into big brand kind of
multi-retailers.
Stores. Yeah, for sure. This is awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Beth. So it's much. Great.
To learn more about Shaker and to learn about Jessica, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, Olivia Deming, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.